It's JJ After Dark, Josh Yastrzemski, keeping you company right here on The Fan. And the countdown is on. I'm thinking about a week in Vegas for the conference tournaments. I'm thinking about Atlantic City maybe for the NCAA tournament. This guy is going to be all over the map. He's doing stuff now for Sports Illustrated, CBS Sports Network. He'll be on a bunch here on The Fan. The college hoops guru, John Rothstein. John, my boy, how are you? What's happening?
JJ, never better. Happy February.
John, happy February to you. And Duke on Tuesday night, that's where I'm going to begin. One of the more incredible comebacks you're going to see. Do you think it's pretty clear it's Duke and then everybody else, or should we lump a Gonzaga, a Tennessee, a Virginia into that category?
Well, you know, Duke has the highest ceiling in college basketball. There's no doubt about that, and I think that's been reiterated by the way they played in the two games against Virginia. But, you know, JJ, it's interesting. When you look at this Duke team, it's a team unlike other teams that have won national championships in years past, because when Kentucky had a dominant team in 2012 and had great one-and-done talents like Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, it also had veterans surrounding those players who had gone deep in the NCAA tournament before, you know, Deron Lamb, Darius Miller, Terrence Jones. When Duke won a national title in 2015, and it had great one-and-done talent, and Tyus Jones, Grayson Allen, Justice Winslow, and Jahlil Okafor, that team as well had great veterans in Quinn Cook, Emile Jefferson, and Matt Jones. This Duke team doesn't have that type of veteran presence, which just speaks volumes to how talented this freshman class is. And, you know, this Duke team right now is on track to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. And when you're comparing them tit for tat with other great freshman classes of all time, you know, the 1992 Michigan team that featured the Fab Five, they were a six seed in the field of 68. So this Duke team, obviously, with, you know, higher ceilings than that one did, in my opinion.
John, big game this weekend. What I'm looking forward to, obviously, it's Tennessee and Kentucky. And I think Tennessee is the real deal. I mean, they were very good last year. They had the brutal loss in the second round. And for Kentucky, I mean, what a difference a couple months can make. I mean, you go back to that Duke game. They played kicking off the year. Duke smoked them. But since then, Kentucky playing a much better brand of basketball, had the brutal loss on Tuesday against LSU. How do you handicap this game here with Tennessee and Kentucky? Kentucky at home, they're favored. Statement game potentially for Tennessee. Their margin of victory has been so impressive this year. What's your early season or early February thoughts, I should say, on the Kentucky Wildcats and the Volunteers?
You know, Tennessee's been a beautiful basketball team all year long, assisting on nearly two out of every three made field goals. But, JJ, I want to point out, Tennessee's played 11 SEC games up to this point. Only one team in those 11 is projected right now to be in the NCAA tournament. So the schedule in conference play for the Vols is totally backloaded. And if you're Kentucky going into Saturday night, you've got to understand that, you know, beating Tennessee is really your only way, not just to avoid being swept at home in back-to-back games, but to put yourself in a situation where you can still kind of keep pace and be in contention for a number one seed. So it's a big 40 minutes at Rupp Arena for John Calipari's squad Saturday night.
John, can't wait Sunday. It's Villanova coming to the Garden to take on St. John's. St. John's has beaten Marquette twice, but they need a couple more wins here to ensure that they're going to be playing in the field of 68. St. John's should have beat Villanova, in my opinion, the first time they played. They
Agreed.
Were big. I mean, they let that game get away from them. What's the biggest key, in your opinion, if St. John's going to beat them Sunday at the Garden?
Just being tight for 40 minutes. You know, I think anybody who's followed the St. John's team this season would agree that they have the most talented roster in the Big East. And you look back right now on their Big East losses. Should have beaten Seton Hall. Should have beaten Villanova. We agree on that. And they also lost home games to DePaul, to Georgetown, and to Providence, three teams who are not projected to be in the NCAA tournament. So I think if St. John's wins the game on Sunday, it'll be mathematically impossible for them to miss the NCAA tournament, barring a collapse of epic proportions. But I think this is a St. John's team right now with their talent base and what they've showed by sweeping Marquette, by being in a situation where they beat VCU on a neutral court, a team that's comfortably projected in the field. I think they should be playing for seeding right now, not worrying about whether or not they're going to be on the right side of the bubble on Selection Sunday.
John Rothstein, College Basketball Insider. He joins us here on The Fan. John, Seton Hall, big game Sunday against Creighton. Seton Hall's got the good wins at the beginning of the year. Beat Kentucky, beat Maryland. It's been up and down in conference. What are they going to need to do, in your estimation, to get in this NCAA tournament?
Got to get to 9 Big East wins, but, you know, you had mentioned it, you know, non-conference scheduling right now is the second most important part of any program after recruiting, and Kevin Willard put his program in a situation where it could move the needle in November and December and then benefit in March, and because of the chips that the Pirates have to play with by beating Kentucky on a neutral court, by beating Maryland at Maryland, now all of a sudden, if they can just get to the Mendoza line, 9-9 in Big East play, they don't have a hard time being left out of the bracket come March 17th.
Well, John, I'm sitting here right now. I'm rocking my Pearl Washington shirt, and you know what that means. I'm dreaming about March. I'm dreaming about big days for Jimmy B and company. It's been a weird year for Syracuse, John, because they had the great win against Duke at Cameron. Kind of mediocre in the non-conference. Old Dominion loss, UConn loss, and they have taken advantage of a soft part of the ACC schedule. How safe should I feel about sitting there that first weekend of the tournament and watching my beloved Orange? What would you say, Johnny?
The Duke win is a massive chip for Syracuse. That is a massive chip. Obviously, I know that Duke had guys out that day, Cam Reddish, Trey Jones. But the thing, you know, for Syracuse, and this is something we've learned the past couple of years, we saw it in 2013. We also saw it in 2016 with the miracle run of the Sweet 16. Even last year, to an extent, with getting to the Sweet 16, I should say in 2016, they went to the Final Four. Syracuse's style is very difficult to prepare for in the NCAA tournament on a short turnaround. It's very difficult for people, if they haven't been in the ACC, to deal with the 2-3 zone. It stifled Arizona State last year. It stifled Michigan State last year. So for Syracuse, you know, I think they're comfortably in the bracket as of now because the bubble is so weak this year. But for me, I still think regardless of where they're seated, similar to Washington with Mike Hopkins, they're going to be a difficult team to play just because of the 2-3 zone. But, you know, JJ, I got to tell you, when I see Pascal Chukwu playing with great energy and being active on the defensive side of the floor, I see a different Syracuse team. And that's the real reason why this team was able to win 3 games in the Field of 68 last year, their defense, not necessarily their offense.
That's a great point, John. And the team I'm going to see at the Carrier Dome in a couple of weeks, Tony Bennett in Virginia, I mean, he's as good as it gets in a regular season. They've had some brutal tournament losses. They had one to Syracuse a couple of years ago in the Elite Eight. They're the first team ever to lose to a 16 seed. They didn't have Hunter in that game. Obviously, that played a monumental role. Virginia, Absolutely. Is this the best team Tony Bennett has ever had in Charlottesville?
7 days a week and twice on Sunday, and I think the difference right now for this Virginia team is, you know, 5'9 freshman Kihei Clark. This is a player who can get underneath opposing point guards and also free up both Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy on offense to roam a little bit, to be more freer to make plays. Kihei Clark, a difference maker for Virginia.
John Rothstein, College Basketball Insider. John, Big 12, you know, every year it's like death taxes and Kansas going to win the regular season. But you look now, I mean, it's a wild Big 12. You got a big game coming up this weekend with Iowa State and Kansas State, Baylor and Texas Tech. Kansas still in the mix. They're a factor. Do you think Kansas is still the team to beat to win this conference?
You know, I promised myself a couple of years ago I was never going to bet against Bill Self in the Big 12 until another team, you know, obviously took the championship from Kansas. But, you know, despite the inspiring win Monday against ECU, I still don't see this Kansas team for the long term having enough to get their 15th straight Big 12 regular season title. I firmly believe that on a neutral court in the NCAA tournament, the team that has the highest ceiling out of any Big 12 team this year is Iowa State. You've got consummate guards in Tyrese Halliburton and Nick Weiler-Bagg. You've got a scorer in Mariel Shayok that America is running out of adjectives for because he's made such a transformation going from Virginia to Iowa State. I see tremendous ceiling at Iowa State. I see seasoning with 5 juniors and seniors starting for Kansas State. And then I see a Kansas team that is limping from February to March because, let's face it, they went into a game on Monday night against TCU, didn't have Udoka Azubuike, didn't have Silvio D'Souza, didn't have Marcus Garrett. And also, if you remember really closely, they had to play down the stretch, walk-ons, and so on and so forth to get minutes. They had these guys, you know, ready to fight because of what the situation was with their roster. You know, they don't have LeGerald Vick. He's left the team for personal reasons. So Monday night was an inspiring win, but to me it was just a microcosm of Bill Self, a Hall of Fame coach, completely wringing out the sponge versus Kansas's long-term prognosis. And a big thing you have to remember, too, with Kansas and it really and them competing in the Big 12 versus competing in the NCAA tournament, 50% of the time down the stretch in the Big 12, they're going to play in the confines of Fog Allen Fieldhouse. That's not the case on the neutral court.
John, final one before you get you out of here, and I was feeling rather down after that Kansas game Monday. Let's just say one of us was holding the ticket on TCU. It was not pleasant, but hey, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, John. Listen, I was the same guy who had Syracuse plus the points against Duke, too. So you get some wins, you get some losses. But final one, on a much more serious note, Zion Williamson, and I know you're a college guy, and that's your forte, and that's your expertise. But do you look at Zion's game and say, surefire, no doubt, will translate at the next level?
7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
Amen.
I mean, I think what you're looking at right now with Zion is this. I mean, JJ, how many times have we seen a basketball player at any level make 7 out of 10 shots? How many times have we seen that player who makes 7 out of 10 shots on average, shooting almost 70% from the floor, be able defensively to affect the game by protecting the front of the rim and also getting out in passing lanes? He's averaging over 2 blocks a game. He's getting around 2 steals a game. And another thing, this guy looks like Mike Alstott physically, but he has feet like Fred Astaire. He's like a dancer out there with the way he can move. And you're looking at right now a day and age in basketball where you don't have labels on positions like you used to 15 or 20 years ago. I see somebody who's not only a social media phenomenon, he's somebody who, again, is must-see television. If you don't watch Duke this year with Zion Williamson at the forefront, you're officially admitting that you hate fun.
John, you're the best. Keep it going, man. We'll be watching along the way. And you're on Instagram now. What a concept, John Rothstein.
I am on Instagram, JJ. I don't control the account, but nice to hear that you're following.
I'm following. I'm enjoying the countdown till Selection Sunday because I know me and the two gentlemen I'm working with, I feel like we're the same way, just waiting, hoping and praying we get there soon enough, bro.
Well, 4 weeks from Saturday, from Sunday is Selection Sunday. You know, in about an hour, we're going to be 29 days away. And you know that when we're 28 days away, you're essentially got 3 weeks left in the regular season. That means a month left the championship week, roughly, or 3 weeks left the championship week. Best time of the year.
John, have a good weekend. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, JJ.